This is Scenic Roots. I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for joining us. The Main Street Farmers Market in downtown Chattanooga, run by volunteers, has stayed open during the coronavirus pandemic as an essential service. Customers have had to place pre-orders with vendors with information from a weekly email newsletter and pick up between 4 p.m. and 6 p.m. on Wednesdays. Jesse Gant Temple is a farmer and board president of Main Street Farmers Market.
Jesse, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
How has the market stayed in business during this time? For one thing, it is considered an essential business.
Yes. Unlike some other farmers markets, the Main Street Farmers Market is food focused. So every vendor has edible products. We have actually flourished during the pandemic because consumers are starting to realize how to source locally and really depend on just local food. There's no limits to how many eggs people can take or how much beef they can buy at our market.
There are limits for when you are open and how people can purchase when you're open.
Right. Three really big changes that we had to do on site. We supplied hand sanitizer at every vendor, which averages about 20 vendors. And we also drew 6-foot lines around our vendor booths to really give people an idea of how far 6 feet is. One of our vendors, Tant Hill Farms, they actually drew like a 6-foot hopscotch for people to kind of play with. But the third and biggest change that the farmers market has had to do is to go pre-orders. So farmers are naturally Luddites, anti-technology, and it was difficult, but even myself included with my farm, Feathers and Fruit, I had to start taking pre-orders via email. Some farmers have gotten Squarespace or websites and Shopify, and farmers aren't really known to count all the beets and carrots and lettuce before they load it up. So really, farmers taking inventory and then taking that inventory and posting it digitally has been a challenge. But we all have become better small businesses because of it. And our loyal customers have remained loyal. We've also gained a lot of new customers because of it too, which has been great.
Did you face any crunches along the way with waves of people reaching out to you saying, when can I come to the market? What's available?
Oh, yeah. Again, the change from just a farmer harvesting and loading up their coolers and showing up and setting up, that change from just organically setting up, I guess you could call it, to taking inventory, uploading it online, making sure our newsletter gets out 2 days before we used to send it. All those changes have really, like I said, made us step up as small businesses. But then even the Main Street Farmers Market newsletter that I mentioned, we used to send it out Monday night, maybe Tuesday. And a lot of people just come and shop. They don't even really looked at the newsletter before. There has definitely been an influx of new customers and even current customers who are subscribing now to be able to see what's available before they get to the market and then pre-order it.
And how have you and other farmers adjusted your workday to accommodate all of this new positioning online to let people know that you're out there and let people pre-order? Because the sun comes up, the sun goes down, and the work on the farm continues whether you have e-commerce or not.
Yeah, I take a deep breath. I'm like, oh, God. I know some farmers have actually hired some part-time help to assist them in counting and boxing, right? Getting those pre-orders not only inventoried and uploaded online, but getting them boxed and bagged and labeled. So I know some farmers who have hired some assistants. And really, it's just with farming, nothing is constant but change. The weather, right? It's going to monsoon all of February and we're going to have below freezing temperatures and constantly adapting to the weather. And this was just something else that we had to adapt to. And I think we all have really mastered it. We've got our websites up. We've got our Shopify account. We've got extra hands. We are starting to bring extra product because we didn't want new customers who missed the pre-order deadlines to walk away empty-handed. So there are vendors that are bringing extra product if they have it, but we're just not putting it out on display for people to touch and just browse.
And what are you hearing from fellow farmers? What concerns are out there among farmers about what we're reading in the news with supply chains, with agriculture, how that's been impacted by this crisis in other parts of the country?
Several of the discussions have really been more so about the wholesale accounts, the retail accounts, such as Blue Fox Cheese Shop, who carries some local product, or Main Street Meats that carries Sequatchie Cove Farm eggs. Blue Indian Kombucha, they are on tap at all the Mojo Burritos. So a lot of our vendors do partner with local restaurants and even some national accounts, and that has really affected how they reach, I guess, a new customer base. And so most of the vendors that I talk with have seen, sadly, a decrease in sales through restaurants and retailers, but I've seen an increase in sale in individuals and local consumers. I call this the upside of the downfall. It's challenged us to think outside the farmer's market and how to reach a customer base, how to reassure locals that farmers aren't going away. Plagues and pandemics, and there's always been farmers. And so the digital age obviously hasn't always been around. So that's really been more of a challenge for most of us small businesses.
And where can people go online for more information?
To get our newsletter, they can sign up at mainstreetfarmersmarket.com. We have a blog and we list pretty much Sunday night what will be available on our website, again, mainstreetfarmersmarket.com. Besides the pandemic, we also just relocated. The Main Street Farmers Market has been at the corner of Chestnut and Main Street. Well, March 11th, we moved down Chestnut Street and we are at the back parking lot of Chattanooga Brewing. So our new address is 1804 Chestnut Street. They can go to our website, like I said, mainstreetfarmersmarket.com. But a huge shout out to Chattanooga Brewing, who is also a small business. They have about a dozen employees who have suffered because of the pandemic. But because Chat Brew has that private parking lot, that has allowed us to continue our farmers market. So just big shout out. They're a small business too. So if you come and support the Main Street Farmers Market, Chattanooga Brewing, they are a huge supporter of the farmers market. So we like to support those who support others.
All right, Jesse, thanks so much.
Thanks.
Crabtree Farms here in Chattanooga will be one of the vendors at tomorrow's Main Street Farmers Market, days after opening its own seasonal on-site farm store, following rules for pre-ordering and pickup at both locations. Melanie Lusk is Executive Director of Crabtree Farms.
Melanie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me today.
How has Crabtree Farms adjusted during this time?
One of the true strengths of Crabtree Farms is that we have a long history of being adaptable. Being a farm in of itself is risky, so we're always on our toes to see how we can move forward with things. So certainly we're blessed with that strength to be innovative and adaptable. Truly though, moving through our spring plant sale, which is actually our largest fundraiser for the farm, was a huge challenge. We were able to move a four-day festival into a two-week online platform in which folks were able to pre-order all of their selections. And basically a skeleton crew of staff and volunteers was able to pick, pack, load, and deliver about 16,000 plants and get them into the cars of our community.
You had to adjust as you were gearing up for an annual event.
Exactly. We were sort of watching things unfold and seeing what the reality was. Were we going to be able to have this event? It was quite the feat. We were able to find some technology that supported us. We're able to get all of those varieties, 450 plus varieties, onto an online platform. and roll with it. We really didn't know what the response would be or how intense those 2 weeks would be. But I'll tell you, when that site went live and I was scrolling through my emails and it's just ping, ping, ping after the other, and the orders just kept flying in to the point where we actually shut down the system, crashed the system, and had to sort of put a halt on things just so we could regroup and figure out how were we going to actually pack all of these items. So the community response has been amazing. And really the staff response has been a real show of our resiliency.
And then how are you conducting operations now?
One of our biggest challenges is that we are a volunteer-heavy organization. And with the mandates and the social distancing, we've had to really limit that. So all staff has been tested after our two-week stint with more interaction with the community. We limit no more than 3 volunteers to join us on the farm at any given time slot right now. So we're really working with a skeleton crew and keeping social distancing amongst the staff and the volunteers that are here.
As things reopen in stages, what can you tell us about the road ahead for you folks at Crabtree Farms?
When we entered 2020, we had our sleeves rolled up and were really ready to expand upon our community engagement. I mean, really, that was setting the whole framework for 2020. So this has been a real challenge because everything we had planned for this year had a real social impact and a social connection. We've had to shift everything as it comes. But we can tell you this, is that we are growing food as normal. We expect harvest to start by the end of May. And you will find us at the Main Street Farmers Market on Wednesday afternoons. Also have a farm store open here at the farm on Fridays and Saturdays. We do hope to continue to move in with our UPIC program that we were hoping to expand upon this year. The key difference, though, will be that we will follow sort of the guidelines of Main Street Farmers Market, where everything is pre-ordered online and then prepared and packaged for easy handoff to our patrons.
What have you been hearing from customers? We know about people who have lost their jobs. We know about bottlenecks at grocery stores and supply chains. These are things that you folks at Crabtree Farms have plenty of experience with, pandemic or no pandemic.
In times of a lot of lack of control, right, people try to gain more control. And having control over your food sourcing is a reasonable way to do that, especially when more folks have time at home to prepare gardens and so forth. So what we're seeing is an actual huge response and increase in those that are interested in growing their own food, which really lent to an amazingly successful spring plant sale for us. There was a lot of gratitude in folks that we were able to make the shift and still offer the plants. A lot of enthusiasm for people that are, you know, ready to roll up their sleeves and try their hand at growing food for the first time, as well as a lot of gratitude from those that traditionally grow their own food. So I think we're positioned to meet a growing need in the community and a growing interest in the community. So we can help with the food sourcing by both the plants and also the actual food.
And where can people go online for more information?
Folks can find more information about Crabtree Farms on our website, crabtreefarms.org. They can also sign up for our electronic newsletter. It's a great asset that we offer the community, includes seasonal recipes and all of the happenings going on at the farm and what we'll be bringing to market each week. They can also follow us on social media at both Facebook and Instagram.
All right. Melanie, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Proof, Bar, and Incubator was just getting started in downtown Chattanooga when the pandemic hit and it had to close. But since then, the collaborative community for food and beverage professionals on East Martin Luther King Boulevard has kept busy. From making food boxes for hospitality workers who lost their jobs, to guiding restaurants, bars, and customers through the reopening process. Nick Dietrich is a bartender at Proof.
Nick, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Ray.
You folks have been busy even while you were shut down.
Absolutely. Been working on a lot of different stuff. We had our soft opening right before all of this hit. We had a lot of great plans going on, but unfortunately, sometimes things don't always go your way.
But you still kept busy, and among the things that you have been doing during this time, start off with the food boxes.
First thing we did, we thought, how can we reach out to our community, help out a lot of those out-of-work industry folks? We put together these industry relief food boxes. It's a no-questions-asked system where people can come by and pick up these boxes full of fresh produce, dry goods, beer sometimes, chips, snacks, things for the family, whatever we can get our hands on. give them out just to help people who might be out of work, might be food insecure, might not be monetarily stable. So that was a lot of fun. First couple of weeks, got a lot of great donations from local businesses as well.
And you also partnered up with distilleries in the area.
Absolutely. So a lot of the distilleries in the area, since they're not selling as much booze right now, we partnered specifically with Gate 11 and Lassen Lyons to help create hand sanitizer. They switched over to distilling hand sanitizer, and we helped bottle and distribute that hand sanitizer locally and across the country as well.
And then when the tornado hit, what did you folks do?
So EPB recruited a lot of linemen, also outside of their company, to help service East Chattanooga after the tornadoes ravaged that area. We helped put together thousands, and I'm not exaggerating, thousands of sack lunches full of sandwiches, fruit, drinks, chips, and helped distribute that to all those linemen that were working 24/7 for weeks on end to help restore that part of town.
And these days, you folks are doing webinars to present and share guidelines from the industry for other businesses in our area.
Absolutely. We've been putting together these guidelines, this structure essentially for how to properly reopen, you know, what it looks like timeline-wise, the different phases we'll go through. It's all about staff education and caring for both the safety of our employees and for the guests. It's a very commensalistic type of relationship we have right now with the coronavirus. And we have to take any means necessary to ensure that everyone's happy, everyone's safe, and that we can continue to have service without any interference from potential outbreaks again.
And where can people go online for more information?
Proofincubator.com is where you can find a lot of stuff. We basically do daily blog posts on things from business resources to personal relief resources, as well as some kind of fun and entertainment subjects as well. So something for everybody. Also find us on Instagram, proof_bar_incubator. A lot of fun stuff on there. We're always posting, trying to stay involved with the community.
All right. Nick, thanks so much.
Ray, thanks for having me.
The pandemic has affected many families across the Southeast and around the world. One sector of the community that has been hit especially hard here in Tennessee, domestic workers. Sergio Martinez Beltran of WPLN News in Nashville talked to some of the women struggling to survive without an income.
42-year-old Jenny has been cleaning houses in the U.S. since coming from Mexico about two decades ago. Up until March, many of her clients had been doctors.
Y sabes que en las casas donde limpiamos, vemos los cuartos, vemos de comida.
She says those houses have rooms full of food. The owners even throw some of that away. Jenny says sometimes, with permission, she would take that food out of the trash and bring it home. Jenny is only using her middle name out of fear of losing future work.
La verdad, la estamos pasando lo que sigue de mal.
She describes her situation as worse than bad. She says that this pandemic has made it impossible to pay the utilities. She owes 3 months. Jenny says she earns some money by mowing the lawn of the neighbors, but at the end of the day, that's barely enough to buy food for her two kids, who are asthmatic. This has made Jenny think about what will happen when her clients, doctors who might be exposed to the coronavirus, start calling. Would she go back to clean their homes to make money? Would that put her kids at risk?
Como que a veces piensas que la cuarentena es un lujo que los pobres no nos podemos dar.
She says being in quarantine is a luxury that poor people can't afford. Jenny's income has now gone down to zero. Her experience is similar to hundreds of domestic workers in the state. Even in good times, the average yearly income of domestic workers or maids in Tennessee is $21,200. That's according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. So most don't have savings. That mentality needs to change, says Day. She's 45 years old and has been cleaning houses in Tennessee for 12 years.
Cuando recobre uno su trabajo, enfocarse, por ejemplo, en lo importante como es empezar un ahorro.
Day, spelled D-E-Y, is also using a different name. She doesn't qualify for unemployment benefits or other assistance. She says she has been able to feed herself, her partner, and her daughters thanks to local food banks. Yes, she admits it has been hard, but she has been able to see some positive out of all of this.
Si yo me iba a trabajar toda la semana y mis hijas se iban a la escuela, Yo tenía que a veces llegar a las 8 de la noche.
She says before the pandemic, she barely had quality time with her daughters. Now that's possible and she's taking advantage of it. The reason why they didn't have a lot of time to spend outside of work is because domestic workers are largely immigrants who don't have any benefits such as vacation days or sick leave.
Más que nada no tenemos pues nuestros derechos.
That's Karina Hernandez. She used to be a pharmacist in Mexico, but 4 years ago she moved to Tennessee. She's been a domestic worker since then, and she's been helping organize some of her colleagues across the state.
En mi búsqueda de esta red de trabajadoras domésticas es empoderar a aquellas personas, las trabajadoras domésticas que más que nada exigir una mejor condiciones de trabajo.
Hernandez says she hopes that if domestic workers in the state unite, they'll be able to gain some benefits and better workplace conditions. That way, when the next pandemic hits, they will have some safety net. For WPLN News, I'm Sergio Martinez Beltran.
You're listening to Scenic Roots. In a moment, our own Will Davis brings us this week's Tennessee Valley StoryCorps.
I'm Will Davis, and this is Tennessee Valley StoryCorps. Conversations from StoryCorps' mobile recording booth when it came to Chattanooga's Miller Park last year. Today, musicians James Von Stein and his son, Jason Von Stein.
I'm a songwriter. I've been songwriting all my life. I had a love for it as a small child. My dad used to play a song called Old Shep, which is about a love of a puppy dog. And, of course, back then, at the age of 10, you know, I fell in love with dogs anyway. So, you know, it really inspired me to want to write like that. And been doing it. I'm 66 now. I don't want to do the math on it, but that's why I have 5,000 songs. And I enjoy doing it, creating little stories and putting music to them. And it's like a 4-minute movie.
I'd like to thank StoryCorps for letting us tell our story. And I'd like to thank you, Jim Von Stein, for being the best father a son could ever have.
Thank you for being my son. You're the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
This next one we'll play for you. My father wrote about me, actually. We got the Nintendo Entertainment System when I was 5. And he was trying to write a song, and I kept interrupting him because I was trying to beat Mario Brothers, and I didn't know what I was doing. And my dad finally came in, and he said, I got a boy, and he's 5 years old, and he don't listen to what he's told. And then he stopped, and he went into the other room for 20 minutes. And he came back, and he played this song for me. And I didn't care at that time because I was a 5-year-old kid, and I only cared about Mario Brothers, but I care more now.
Of course, I thought that he would be excited about it, you know, that this was a song written about him. And he looked at me, and he started crying because I had put I used the word jackass in it, which, you know, is like a mule. Of course, he heard that word and thought that I called him a bad name, and he started crying. And then I'm like, oh, my goodness, why are you crying? I wrote a song about you. And then he pointed out it was that word without saying it. And I realized and explained to him it was just a mule being stubborn. And, of course, then he loved the song from that point. Yeah.
All right, this is called Little Bit of Me. Got a boy and he's 5 years old. He don't listen to what he's told. He's stubborn as a jackass mule. Thinks it's odd where the kids are cool. I guess he got a little bit of me. There's no chance that he won't take. Bashing heads on his favorite sink. Stomping ants in the backyard plot. Drinking water from a busted pot. I guess he got a little bit of me. Other day at the playground court, saw him hollering at a pair of shorts. Couldn't believe it, my own eyes. The boy had hypnotized. I guess he got a little bit of me. At the mall, he's an awesome sight. He's turning heads from left to right. Got the class and a touch of style. But do okay for a real long while. I guess he got a little bit of me.
That was Jason Von Stein and his father, James Von Stein. This Tennessee Valley StoryCorps conversation and others can be found on our website, wutc.org, and you can subscribe to the Tennessee Valley StoryCorps podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. This series is produced and edited by me and brought to you in part by EPB Fiber Optics. I'm Will Davis.
This is Scenic Roots, Barking Legs Live. Good afternoon, I'm Richard Winham. Every Tuesday afternoon, we'll be bringing you highlights from the Wednesday night jazz sessions from Barking Legs. Before the advent of the pandemic, the sessions were held in the lounge on Wednesday evenings between 7 and 9 at Barking Legs. Until Barking Legs reopens, the sessions are online on the Barking Legs Facebook page. First up this afternoon, two performances by Jose Valentino, a gifted flute and saxophone player who until recently was on the faculty at Lee University. With him are Sean Perkinson playing guitar, David Schwab playing bass, Matt Tenner is the drummer, and a young conguero, one of Jose's students at Lee, Robert Acevedo, is part of the band. This performance is from 2017. The second is the quartet without Robert playing congas, Jose playing sax, from Barking Legs in 2019. We'll be right back. Jose Valentino, Barking Legs, last year. Now this is Robert Crabtree playing piano with David Schwab playing bass, Jim Crumble playing drums, a session they recorded for the online Wednesday night jazz sessions at Barking Legs a couple of weeks ago. You may have caught some other highlights from this session on Scenic Roots last Tuesday afternoon. We'll be right back. On Scenic Roots, this is music recorded live in Barking Legs. I'm Richard Winham. Thanks for listening.
I'm Ray Bassett. Thanks for listening to Scenic Roots. We come to you from WUTC at the University of Tennessee at Chattanooga. Thanks, as always, to our producers, Haley Solomon, Carly Dodson, Elena Nourabadi, Connor Brown, and Will Davis. Email us at scenicroots423@gmail.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at scenicroots423. Listen to us online anytime at WUTC.org and the WUTC app. For Richard Winham and the rest of our team, join us again next time for Scenic Roots.